Radio West producer Benjamin Bombard has been reporting the story for the last few months about psychedelics. For a few years now, there's been this resurgence of interest in drugs and substances that elicit hallucinations and mystical visions. We're talking about LSD and psilocybin and ayahuasca. In the 60s, researchers were just starting to understand the therapeutic potential of psychedelics when people freaked out. This moral panic set in. Research dollars dried up. The substances were banned. Now, a lot of those obstacles are still in place, but more and more scientists are taking a clinical interest in how these psychedelic experiences could help treat addiction and trauma, even the existential fear of patients who are terminal. In his reporting, Benjamin discovered that former Mormons had been turning to psychedelics for various reasons. Many were trying to replace this feeling of transcendence. One of the people he talked to was David.
For most of his life, David did what he was told to. In part, that meant not drinking coffee. He didn't even have his first cup of coffee until he was 55 years old.
I had to sneak to do it. You got a 55-year-old man sneaking to take a coffee like a little kid sneaking to, I don't know.
Steal a cookie.
Yeah, yeah. And growing up through my teenage years, when alcohol was presented to me, didn't touch the stuff. I don't even remember being offered marijuana, but that would have been so far off the radar.
David's from a small town in northern Utah. He was raised in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. He was a Mormon. He's not anymore, but back when he was a faithful Mormon, drugs weren't just off the radar.
It would take you down and you'd end up on the street as a homeless, drunk, lost everything in their life. If you went down that road, and it was the same with alcohol and the plant medicine, any of those elements, they were so evil that you don't even think about them. If you'd have told me 5 years ago that I would have done a mushroom, I'd have thought you were on mushrooms.
Mushrooms. Magic mushrooms. But before David could take magic mushrooms, his life would have to undergo radical changes. He was Mormon, after all, and fully in.
It was my life, and it worked really well when I was in it.
What does that mean?
That was my community. I believed it was true. I believed it was right. I thought I had the golden ring.
Soon, though, a chink opened in David's faith, and it started to widen. When, as he told me, he bellied up to the bar, reading and finding everything he could that challenged his belief system. In that golden ring, he came to believe that it was fool's gold, and it made him angry.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain.
You know, to me, the Wizard of Oz took on a whole new meaning.
Who are you?
Toto pulled the curtain back, and when I saw who the great and powerful Oz was, I was hurt.
You are?
Coming to the realization, oh, the great and powerful Oz is not going to get me home. And the great and powerful Oz has been sending me off on these great missions to accomplish this, to go kill Wicked Witch of the West, and to do all these big things with an idea that ultimately I'm going to be rewarded with going home. And it was that real to me. It's like, this is not what it claims to be.
It was on this show, on Radio West, that David heard an interview with the journalist Michael Pollan. We had him on to talk about a book that he'd written called How to Change Your Mind, and it's about psychedelics and the history and science behind substances like LSD, DMT, and, yeah, magic mushrooms. So David heard what Pollan had to say, which is in part that psychedelics may have some very real scientific value, and he was intrigued. He wanted to know more, and he wanted to keep pushing boundaries. So he found an all-night peyote ceremony held by the Native American church.
And I didn't even have the courage to go full peyote. I just drank the tea. I did not get any psychedelic high out of it. There wasn't enough in the tea to affect me. So all I got was kind of a sleepless night in a peyote ceremony. What my first experience gave me was all of the sneak and the cheat and the guilt and the shame.
It was another sneak. first coffee, now psychedelics. He came clean about it all to his wife, and they tried to work it out, but they couldn't. Soon enough, they got a divorce. But he didn't just leave his marriage. He also left the church, and with it, everything he had ever known. He was a 58-year-old man now, learning for the first time who he was without the guidelines of a faith or a marriage to define him. And he still had this curiosity about what a real psychedelic trip would be like. It was months later that he found a psychedelic guide, someone who would take care of his body while his mind took flight. And the guide provided David with what's known as a heroic dose, 5 grams of mushrooms, which is a ton.
So I chewed all 5 grams of them up and went outside to turn the garden hose on. And while I was out there, it started to shift. I thought I got to get the hose turned off and get back in the house. But then it took me right out of my consciousness. The beginning of it had a lot of color, brilliant colors. And then I was taken in this journey. I began to travel down to the grocery store. I could hover over it. Then I went off the earth. Through space. To the end of the universe. I was able to gain the concepts of this is where it all began. Then I came back through that to here. And I got to experience my parents passing away. I got to experience me growing old and dying. I got to experience being reborn. I actually was coming through a birth canal, being born again. I remember looking up at my guide and saying, "Are you my mother?" And she said, "No."
As morning broke and the sun was rising, David felt calm, and he felt a deep sense of unity.
It was kind of pleasant to just sit there and watch as the morning was unfolding and know that I'm connected, that I am a piece of everything that is.
Some people say that psychedelics are tools for exploring the self. A way to go inside your consciousness and see stuff that you can't see or that you've been overlooking. And that's just what happened to David. As he told me, he learned that he contained everything necessary to be himself. He told me that he could captain his own ship without being told how to steer it.
I can give myself permission. I am the authority of my life. That's what was happening, is I was taking back my personal authority. If I want to have a drink of coffee, I don't need to hide from anybody or sneak. I started giving myself permission to be an adult. If you want to do it, do it. It's my choice. And that's what I think helped me get to that space.
David's not alone. He's not the only ex-Mormon out there turning to psychedelics after leaving the faith, not by far. Over the past few months, I've spoken with numerous people like David, people who were once extremely devout in their LDS faith, and they fell away from the church for various reasons, and once they did, they felt aimless and adrift. Nearly all of the people I spoke with felt, like David did, that psychedelics found them and shone a light into who they truly are and how they show up in the world.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, Benjamin Bombart is going to take us through this subculture of former Latter-day Saints who have turned to psychedelics for an ecstatic experience, for spiritual connection, to heal themselves. Because Benjamin found there is something in Mormonism that primes these people to have their consciousness expanded. Here's our conversation. So, Benjamin, when did you first notice this story? And what interested you?
Well, the idea of ex-Mormons and psychedelics first caught my attention last summer when I read a column by Robert Gerke in the Salt Lake Tribune. He was writing about former Utah state legislator Steve Urquhart, who's from St. George. And Steve was once a very conservative and very Mormon guy. But some experiences that he had in his life kind of kicked him off of that path and onto a alternative and really radically different path entirely. And the subject of Robert Gerke's column was how Steve Urquhart, after leaving the church, had gone on and founded his own church. Only in his church, the sacrament, instead of being bread and wine, would be psychedelics. So that got me thinking. I wanted to know what this was all about. I mean, Steve's a fascinating story in and of himself, but I wanted to know who these people were who were joining his church. So I started looking around, and I soon found a podcast called Mormons on Mushrooms, which kind of indicated to me that the line that I was pulling on kind of, you know, had a fish on the other end. Podcasts today are kind of like magazines once were. If there's a culture or a subculture out there, there's a podcast about it, and I've always been interested in subcultures. Then early last fall, I attended a virtual conference held by Urquhart's church, which he called the Divine Assembly. And I started noticing while I was in that virtual conference that everybody in virtual attendance seemed to be, one, interested in psychedelics, and two, former members of the LDS Church. So I wanted to find out why. Why would ex-Mormons be drawn to psychedelics?
What do you think this is all about then? It's people who felt secure in a place, they leave, and they're looking to replace it with something. I don't know if you've boiled it down in that way.
Yeah, Doug, I think this is about people looking for a few things. So the people I spoke with, what I heard from them is that while Mormonism could be at times very spiritually fulfilling, it could also feel very controlling. This is a very orthodox faith, and it prescribes a rather narrow path to walk in this life if you hope to achieve the highest levels of the afterlife. Some of that control is exerted through the church itself, through its teachings and how it defines right behavior, but a lot of it is social pressure that people feel when they're a part of the church. And most, if not all, the people I spoke with kind of felt chafed under those pressures. They felt like they couldn't live both the Mormon life and their own life as they wanted to live it. And that dissonance left them feeling wounded and traumatized. And psychedelics, they found, offered a way to help process that trauma in various ways. Other ex-Mormons I spoke with said that what they found in psychedelics, whether it was magic mushrooms, LSD, DMT, ayahuasca, they found a way to get to know themselves better, to see themselves independently of the faith they'd grown up in. And some of the people I spoke with, like, for instance, David, who we heard from earlier, they described deeply spiritual experiences that they had during their psychedelic trips. And these experiences kind of rekindled that relationship with the divine that they'd established during their time in the church.
So let's be clear about something. Just how representative is this, as far as you can tell? Because it seems common for people who leave a high-demand religion to be looking to replace something that. But this group has turned to psychedelics. Mm-hmm. Now, is that rare? Is this a large community, or certainly large enough as a subset of a community to be significant? Like, how representative is this? Because I don't want to give the impression that everyone who's leaving Mormonism is turning to mushrooms. Right?
Yeah. So it's large enough, as we said, that there's a podcast. I spoke with the hosts of that podcast, and they said that their podcast regularly receives 1,000-plus downloads. So we could assume that conservatively it's maybe about that large. And I asked this of a number of the people that I spoke with, how large is this community? The responses generally ranged in the thousands and growing.
Let's talk about one of the people you interviewed for this experience. This is a Mormon who has experience with psychedelics, a person who's not ready to be public, we should mention, for various reasons. We'll call him Peter. It's not his real name. Peter left Mormonism early in his life. He leaves it like 13. He's self-medicating. He's going through that sowing his oats process. But talk a little bit about the experience he has when he's 18. He tries mushrooms. And it's different from the sowing the oats part before.
So like you said, Peter was a teenager when he left the church, and a rebellious teenager, pushing against his Mormon family and his Mormon upbringing very intensely. He's a teenager, so you push against the powers that be. And for him, he started smoking marijuana at a very young age, started drinking at a very young age. And as he told me, when he would drink and he would smoke, and he would drink and smoke himself into oblivion, basically, he would come out of that and he just want to do it again. And then somehow he came across magic mushrooms. And it was a qualitatively different experience than drinking or smoking pot. It opened something inside of him that felt revelatory rather than palliative and deadening.
So this isn't actually Peter speaking here. Again, he wanted us to protect his identity. So we had our producer, Tim Slover, read Peter's part from the interview.
And I can't remember how I came across, like, my first opportunity to do psilocybin, but I did at 18. And what just struck me, it had a completely different quality than, you know, like the weekend benders getting, like, drinking hard alcohol with my friends and getting high to the point where, like, I couldn't function anymore. But the psilocybin, it actually felt medicinal. I was struck. I didn't know. I was just an 18-year-old looking to misbehave and self-medicate, you know, in the ineffective sense. So when I took psilocybin and, like, coming out of it, I'm like, whoa. Like, that opened up windows of insight and, like, possibilities of healing that I had no idea, you know, were a part of, like, taking psychedelics.
So what did he say the experience was like then? Because he mentioned to you that it was – how did he put it? It changed his concept of the self.
Yeah, as Peter put it, the self behind the self. He kind of used spiritual words to describe it. He said it was spacious and luminous and free, non-reactive to the challenges of life. It was removed, in a way, from his waking life. And developing a sensitivity to that self behind the self and tapping into it helped him gain, he said, this distance and a new perspective onto the psychological pain he was feeling at a very young age.
Peter told you that it made him realize that the self was more like a dream.
For me, psilocybin had a way of just like – it was – it made it obvious to me that my – we could call it the empirical self, the phenomenal self. The I that I identify with is a bit of a dream structure. Like, we all know, like, when we wake up from a dream in the morning, it's like, oh, I had a dream. But I can shake it off. No matter how good the dream was, how bad the dream was, I can have breakfast, take a shower, and, like, meet the day. My experience is adults in the modern world aren't as capable of, like, shaking off the self, right? The self that, let's say, has persistently negative thoughts. Let's say I have an inner critic that's ruthless and says, like, you can't pursue your dream job. You're not good enough. You need to stay in this dead-end job, or you need to stay in this dead-end relationship because no one loves you really. Like, we're stuck in our virtual reality of a personality. And most adults nowadays have a very difficult time seeing through that. We are deeply identified with the thinking, emotional self. What psilocybin did for me at 18 years old is it rendered that a dream state. Like, what I'd take to be just solid and permanent, all of a sudden it was like, oh, my thinking mind is just another dream state that I can wake up from. And that was just like a complete paradigm shift.
So the psychedelic experience it's not for euphoria, not necessarily for euphoria, right? This is for something else. They're searching for something else or looking for something else.
Yeah, one of the gentlemen I spoke with, David, and we should say that all the names we'll use throughout this conversation, not their real name.
Why not, by the way?
Because of the concerns about legality.
Yep. Which we'll get to.
So David said that when he first wanted to take psychedelics, the last thing he was looking for was a frivolous, silly, euphoric experience. He wanted to go deep. He wanted to go, in his words, full peyote. Another young man I spoke with was even more scared of not going deep than he was of having a bad trip. He wanted to travel, like David said he did, to the ends of the universe to touch the divine. Many of the people I spoke with were interested in psychedelics for similar reasons. And with psychedelics, how deep you go depends on dosage. If you take a couple grams, say, of magic mushrooms, you're more likely to have a euphoric, kind of entertaining experience, the kind of warped sense of reality. But if you take a lot of mushrooms, like David or Peter did, well, that's a different story entirely.
Benjamin Bombard is one of the producers of our program. When we get back from a break, more about how psychedelics are giving former Mormons a mystical and sometimes familiar experience. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
Utah lawmakers and our governor seem to agree.
A high-quality education can change everything.
But, you know, money. I'm Sonia Hudson.
I'm Emily Means. And we're your hosts for KUER's politics podcast, 45 Days. This week, we're looking into the budget for K-12 students and why Utah ranks 51st in the nation in per-pupil spending.
Listen to the show at 45days.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, producer Benjamin Bombard is with us, taking us through this subculture that has developed over the last few years of people who have left the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, all for various reasons, and for various reasons, have turned to psychedelics for healing, for comfort, for a feeling of transcendence. Most of the things they were hoping to get but weren't out of Mormonism. Back now to our conversation with Benjamin. Let's talk about the idea here that there's something about the Mormon experience that makes psychedelics appealing or even familiar, which seems strange. But I want to go back to Peter because he told you something that I wanted to ask about. Peter said that Latter-day Saints are used to and are ready for and kind of looking for this feeling of transcendence or whatever you want to call it. Here's another moment from our interview with Peter, read by our producer, Tim.
The church, in my opinion, does a really good job at helping sensitize people to like what we call the Holy Spirit, the influence of the Spirit, the influence of the sacred in our lives. So when you have a substance like psilocybin that not for everybody but for I think a disproportionately large number of people, it tends to overlap with that. I think some former Latter-day Saints are like, whoa, like this is fulfilling on such a deep level and I want that in my life.
So what's he saying? He's saying that this emphasis in Mormonism on the communion with the Spirit, that can lend itself to these explorations in psychedelics?
This was a question I had going into my reporting, Doug, was there something about the LDS experience, about being Mormon, that primed these people who, after leaving the faith, found psychedelics? Or, as many of them put it rather strangely, they were themselves found by psychedelics. The psychedelics found them. So did Mormonism prepare them in some way for having a psychedelic experience, and did it prime them once they ventured into that psychedelic space to have a mystical or divine experience? Mormonism, after all, is a faith that emphasizes communing with the Spirit, of seeking guidance from the Spirit. It's a revelatory faith. And as one person I spoke with said, it should not come as a surprise that ex-Mormons who use psychedelics tend to have spiritual experiences on them because their entire lives were built on spirituality.
Let's talk about Rachel because she really illustrates this, I think, pretty well. Tell us about Rachel, first of all, who she is.
Yeah, I talk to a lot of people, Doug. I'm kind of a gregarious people person. And Rachel, I would have to say, she's the most spiritually tuned person I've ever met in my life. The amount of spiritual experiences this young woman has had just struck me as extraordinary. So, for instance, she has this memory of being basically a baby, a toddler in her crib.
Being really upset by something and lying down and then just feeling this feeling in my room of warm comfort, but that it, like at an intensity that I later in my life grew to recognize as the Spirit of God.
She felt this hand on her back and she turned around and she looked around.
And there wasn't anybody there and just feeling very comforted. So those kinds of experiences, even as a little girl, praying and having what I experienced as answers or comfort or feeling presence and those kinds of things were part of my experience.
They were part of her experience both with God and in the Mormon faith.
Now, this sounds very Mormon, and we should say she is very Mormon, at least in the early part of her life. She goes to BYU, she goes on a mission, and it's on this mission where she has these spiritual experiences.
Yeah, she told me how when she was on her mission, she and her mission companion would often pray for guidance from the Holy Spirit.
We would pray to see who we should go out and teach.
And their prayers, she says, were answered.
So often when we would teach people about Joseph Smith, about the restoration of the priesthood, about the Book of Mormon, about all of these things, the Spirit would come. And it would come into the room, that feeling, that warm, intense feeling of divine love and divine presence. As missionaries, we would say, well, this is the evidence. And we would be in the room when it happened. And we would say, you feel that? That's it. That's the thing. And they were like, yeah, I do.
As far as Rachel sees it, there's a good reason that these kinds of spiritual experiences were so common for her and for other Mormons.
In a practice type of way, Mormonism tends to be, at least this is my observation, have a more mystical emphasis than a lot of other American Christian religions. There is so much conversation of talking about the Spirit, and that's a very experiential, phenomenological thing. That's not just an idea. It's not theology. It's sort of an emphasis on the lived experience of communion with that feeling of God and with that guidance of God.
Okay, so Rachel has these powerful spiritual experiences. She sees the connection more broadly about her own personal experiences and the experience of, you know, American Christianity in general. But then she leaves Mormonism. What happens to those spiritual experiences for her, Benjamin? She misses it, right?
They stopped.
Yeah.
This was a person who had these kinds of spiritual experiences on a regular basis. And when she left the church, they disappeared. And that left her feeling a great loss in her life. They were very much a part of who she was.
Hmm. At what point does she get to a psychedelic experience? Take us to that point.
Yeah, it was several years later. And all the while, she felt this spiritual void inside herself. And then she had a chance to take psychedelics.
A friend of mine, we went to the mountains and I took mushrooms and hamburger.
At first, the experience was a bit unnerving.
I went through sort of like a patch of fear.
And then things started to change. She passed through these different stages of revelation. And along the way, she rediscovered that missing part of herself.
Ah, it's still really beautiful to me. When I was high in the mountains, I had this feeling as I was looking at this really beautiful, similar landscape that I'd grown up in. Late afternoon golden sun on these trees and sage. I had this strong spiritual experience that I hadn't had in years. It was warm, intense, felt like love, felt like divinity, like it filled my soul and my skin and my cells and my muscles. The peace of God surpasseth all understanding. This thing, when you experience it, that's so deeply satisfying, so deeply gratifying. I felt that again. And it was important to me in that moment because I had left the safe harbor of Mormonism. And then feeling that spiritual experience outside of the narrative that I had left behind, that everybody told me I would never be able to leave behind. That's the narrative in Mormonism. If you leave the harbor, you will shipwreck. Getting to that point where I could see another vista to feel that spiritual feeling in was just a really profound experience for me.
Let's figure out what it is these former Mormons are connecting to through psychedelics. So they don't have this feeling of, you know, the spirit that's coming from their faith anymore, but they want this transcendent experience. So this gets us to a researcher you talked to, a man named Bill Richards. Tell us who he is.
Bill Richards is one of the old dons of psychedelic research.
Well, my name is Dr. Bill Richards. I'm a clinical psychologist.
And he also has a background in comparative religion and the psychology of religion. He's been studying psychedelics for the better part of five decades.
I've been working at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine the last 20 years as a psychologist in research with psilocybin, the ingredient of the so-called magic mushrooms.
He's guided hundreds and hundreds of people on psychedelic trips, and he's even taken some of his own. And Richard says that at 80 years old, after studying these drugs for the better part of half a century, he's still very excited about
exploring the promise of these substances for both medical care, psychotherapy, but also for religion.
Okay, so I want to get a sense of how it is that Richards explains the experience of psychedelics for, you know, for religious people or formerly religious people. Let's talk about these studies that he conducts.
Yeah, in the studies Bill Richards and his colleagues do, they spend days getting to know a volunteer as they prepare him or her for a psychedelic trip. And then when the time comes to take the psychedelic, the researchers and the volunteer, they're all in a room that's kind of set up like a living room. The hope is that the more comfortable and safe the volunteer feels, the better the chance that they'll have a positive experience and not a negative, disturbing one.
There's so much more involved than simply throwing the drug into your mouth and seeing what happens. The drug itself seems to almost unlock the door to other states of consciousness, if you will. But what you do when that door is open depends on your preparation, your intention, how safe you feel at the moment.
If the researchers have done their job well, Richards says, the volunteer will feel safe to
go deep into any dreamlike sequence and see where it leads, you know? And so our guideline in preparation is the mantra, trust, let go, be open. Trust, let go, be open. Those types of directions are very helpful. Trust. And also just to really value curiosity. Let go. So if there's a staircase or a tunnel or a path in the woods or whatever, be open. You kind of want to know where it leads. If I see a dragon, go towards the dragon.
Trust. Let go.
Look it in the eye.
Be open.
Talk to it. Become it. Spew your own fire. But if you run from the dragon, you know what happens. It chases you, you get smaller, it gets bigger, you wake up in a cold sweat, and you're scared to go to sleep again because you know he's still waiting for you. It's really an invitation for healing, for insight. But you have to be grounded in a relationship and motivated in your own inner intention. Spiritual, psychological growth, sometimes it's hard work. Going through what St. John of the Cross called the dark night of the soul, sometimes it's pretty scary and dismal, but you keep putting one foot in front of the other, and eventually you come to the other side of it.
Trust, let go, be open.
There's nothing within that you need to avoid. If it comes to you, my conviction is that means you're ready to deal with it.
Once the volunteer returns to this world, once they pass back through that door that leads from this world to the hinterlands of their psyches, Richards and his colleagues ask them to write out what it was they experienced, where they went, what they felt, what they saw.
And they always say, well, that's impossible, but I'll do the best I can because I like you guys and I promised I'd be a good research volunteer, you know? But when you take those reports and content analyze them, you know, if a full mystical experience happens, you can find descriptions of unity, transcendence of time and space, intuitive knowledge, a sense of sacredness, deeply felt positive mood, joy, peace, love, and sense of ineffability and what we call paradoxicality, that is very hard to put into words. I died, but I've never been so alive. God was one, but God contained everything that is.
And Richards has found that these kinds of mystical, sacred experiences can be reliably induced by psychedelics.
About 75% of the people that we give adequate dosage to at Johns Hopkins now have this type of experience. I like to talk about the threshold we're on where science, certainly our psychotherapy research with psilocybin, really has bumped into what we used to call the sacred.
In other words, scientists, through their research into psychedelics, are exploring the divine. The volunteers in these studies, in many cases, they report dying and being reborn. It's very religious stuff, like sacred spiritual stuff. And, you know, based on the conversations I had with members of the ex-Mormon community, that kind of transformative mystical experience is very appealing.
Are they dangerous? Like, what's the risk here in for people who try them or go looking for these experiences?
Well, it should be said, Doug, that no drug is without risks. And with psychedelics, there are two very serious risks. One is their illegality. These are Schedule I banned substances on the federal level. They're illegal to use or possess almost across the board. If you're caught with them, you could face serious criminal charges. So that should be taken very seriously. It should also be stressed that you should not use these substances if you have a family history of serious mental illness, stuff like schizophrenia or bipolar disorder, because psychedelics can just exacerbate those conditions. But the most common negative experience is a bad trip. You know, fear, anxiety, paranoia, erratic, and potentially dangerous behavior, especially in a non-clinical, unsupervised setting. Researchers have found that bad trips aren't common, but the chances of a bad trip do increase as dosage increases. We should also say that studies have found that bad trips can still be meaningful and spiritual. It's that dark night of the soul stuff that Bill Richards was talking about. Those concerns aside, according to the science, psychedelics do appear to be safer than most substances. The risks of taking a toxic dose of psychedelics is virtually none. The fatal dose of LSD, for instance, is 1,000 times greater than the effective dose. Studies have found that there is a negligible risk of dependency or addiction. And as Bill Richards notes, though, there's a lot more to these drugs than simply popping them into your mouth and seeing what happens. The importance of set and setting is stressed by every scientist who studies these substances. These are very serious and very powerful drugs.
Benjamin Bombard, he's one of the producers for the program. We'll take a break, come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
KUER's statewide service stays strong thanks to the listeners who also contribute to the station every month. Our nearly 9,000 sustaining members provide the most reliable source of income for the station, so we can bring you trustworthy news and information. If you value our commercial-free programming, consider becoming a KUER sustainer, with a recurring gift starting at just $5 a month, or increase your existing pledge. Just go to KUER.org/donate. And thanks for your support.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, our producer Benjamin Bombard is with us. For the past several months, he's been following the story about the resurgence of interest in the clinical possibilities of psychedelics. And along the way, he's discovered that a decent number of former Mormons had taken this interest in the hallucinations and the mystical visions of substances like magic mushrooms and ayahuasca. Back now to our conversation. So we've been talking about why it is some former Mormons turn to psychedelics. And part of it is, as you've been talking about, trying to replace some experience with divine. But there's another part of this I want to ask you about, and that is that a lot of these former Mormons are looking to psychedelics as a kind of healing. So let's talk about that. What is it about the experience of being in this high-demand faith, like Mormonism, that makes some people feel like they need to, you know, they need to heal?
What I heard from the ex-Mormons I spoke with, Doug, was that the roles you're expected to fill as a good and worthy Mormon, whether those are imposed by the church itself or through cultural pressures, as we've mentioned before already, those roles, those sky-high expectations, can be both restricting and painfully difficult to try to live up to. What I heard was that it can be difficult or impossible to square certain ways of living, behaviors, philosophies, politics, with being a faithful, card-carrying Mormon. How I understand that must feel is that when you feel like you're a certain person and you feel that how you want to express that person, how you want to express yourself, is being repressed by the orthodox confines of whatever environment it is, Mormonism or otherwise. And you can't have it both ways. You can't be true to yourself and fulfill that prescribed role. That repression can cause great emotional pain and distress. And from what I heard during my reporting, it can even be traumatic.
All right, let's talk about Sarah. Tell us about Sarah, first of all.
Sarah was a very devout Mormon for much of her young life.
I am 34.
She grew up in eastern Idaho.
Rigby, Rexburg, southeastern Idaho area.
Home to BYU, Idaho. And Sarah told me that she grew up in a very Mormon bubble.
For me, there was no other way of living your life except through Mormonism. You were just kind of expected to. And that influenced obviously every decision that I made in my life.
And like we were talking about, she knew the path that she was supposed to follow, the mold of a good Mormon woman, and she did her best to fit it.
I met a nice returned missionary first semester of college. I was 18. He was 22. We got engaged 3 months into our relationship, got married 6 months later, and just kept that momentum going of, this is just what you do. Had our first child at 21, had two more kids over the next 6 years.
Unlike a lot of the people I spoke with, Sarah's falling away from the church wasn't all that painful. She and her husband drifted apart, got divorced, and it was pretty much the same way for her with Mormonism. All in all, her life post-Mormonism was actually pretty good.
Psychedelics wasn't even on the radar for me. I was pretty complacent in my life. Like, I thought I had left Mormonism. I was progressive politically. I was advocating. So I was like, I don't need to question anything more about patterns of behavior that I have or how Mormonism impacted me. I think, okay, you know, I'm a feminist. It put me in this box. I'm out of this box. I'm great.
About 2 years ago, Sarah's parents separated.
And I was like, oh, this is going to bring up some trauma for myself. So I started therapy. And in starting therapy, that's when I kind of started to dive deep into patterns of behavior that tied into religion, tied into generational trauma, was starting to come up.
And it was around this time that Sarah met her current partner.
He was the one that was like, I really want to go out in the desert and do mushrooms with you.
So tell me about your first trip.
So
the first time I went out into the desert and I did LSD, there were sober guides there. I didn't really know what to expect.
Sarah said that her first trip had its ups and downs, but it was largely positive. During the trip, she had a realization that helps her unpack those patterns of behavior that she'd picked up in Mormonism that she just didn't like, that didn't feel healthy to her.
What it gave to me was the ability to let go of this idea that I had to sacrifice my own happiness for other people, which is very much something Mormon women are taught. Your needs and your wants and your happiness doesn't matter. Because really, you exist to meet the needs of your kids. You exist to meet the needs of your spouse. That trip to me was like, it's okay to claim happiness for yourself. It's okay to put yourself first. It's okay to put your needs first and not feel guilty for it if you are still meeting the needs of your kids. They need a full person as their parent, not just a shadow of yourself.
You know, Doug, Bill Richards has said of psychedelics that they are to our inner world what telescopes are to astronomy and microscopes are to biology. They help us see things that would otherwise be invisible. So in Sarah's case, psychedelics helped her see and then break down ways of thinking that were contrary to who she felt like she was and how she wants to behave. And for Sarah, like a lot of the other people I interviewed, psychedelics acted like a kind of compressed therapy. And how therapy usually works is that what you say and how you're behaving is reflected back to you. It gives you new perspective. Psychedelics, it seems, can function in kind of the same way, except in 6 hours instead of 6 years. What I was told is that after you get this new look at yourself, you feel more connected to who you truly are.
You know, there's an interesting sort of twist to all of this, too, is that sense of connection seems to lead to this I don't know. I have to say a kind of a surprising sense of empathy that you got from some of the people that you talked to toward the church itself, which gets us back to Sarah, who had this experience with psychedelics that kind of surprised me. While it helped her heal from her experience as an active Latter-day Saint, it also took away her sense of resentment.
Leaving something that is so ingrained in every aspect of your life, and especially when you have family members that have been it for generations and generations, it seems like you've escaped something. And it's hard not to have the feeling of superiority, of like, well, I'm the smart one that got out of this situation. Look at me, you know, like pioneering out of this, seeing the lies for what they are. At least in my own experience, that negatively impacted the way that I viewed family members and people before me, because I'm like, you still are buying into this? It was the frustration. And then to view that generationally of like, you left everything that you had to come over and to do this. So on my most recent mushroom trip, I was listening to music and a song came on, and the idea was, be kind to those who created your story, those that came before you, because that's who you are. It was this overwhelming moment of gratitude that every choice my ancestors made has led me to the point of where I am and who I am.
Which is really interesting, because you heard the same thing from Peter, who we were talking about earlier. He said something similar. In fact, Peter, his experience was quite different from Sarah. He ends up going back to Mormonism. He is right now an active Latter-day Saint. And psychedelics in some way helped him return.
When I took psilocybin, the whole all of reality was just imbued with a sense of the sacred. And I'd learned the language of the sacred in a beautiful, powerful way in my, you know, tradition growing up. So there was no dissonance for me. If anything, I was so starved for the sacred. I'd been out of the church for 5 years. I didn't have an outlet for it as I once had. So, you know, taking psilocybin and like experiencing everything is just absolutely holy, like right down to its core. It actually opened my heart back up to like, oh, this is what my parents were saying. They were saying everything's holy. They're saying that like Christ's love and light is in and through all things. Like, it's true. like it gave me a new way to appreciate the wisdom of the ancestors and the tradition.
Okay, so you've been exploring this story now for several months. So what did you learn through this experience?
Well, I was surprised to learn just how mystical a religion Mormonism can be for a lot of people. I was also struck by the consistency of the experiences that I heard from these people when they were in the church, after they left, and what they found during their psychedelic experience. And kind of finally, this reporting made me think about the spirit of Mormonism and how twinned it is with the pioneering spirit, the enthusiasm to explore unseen territory. These people I spoke with, they may no longer belong to the church, but they do still seem to retain that pioneering spirit. And with the aid of psychedelics, it seems that they're exploring this unseen territory within.
Benjamin Bombard, he's a producer for the show. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, we'd love to hear from you. We're on Twitter at Radio West. Our intern is Aaron Camargo, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Tim Slover. Christy Miners is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.